This is our number
two. It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
A world of news in a tiny 15-minute package just for you. That hour number two echo is a little Halloween now that I...
A little creepy, yeah.
I apologize for the creepy nature of it. I was going for festive, and I went instead for fear, apparently. So not my best work. All right, let's get to the fastest 15 minutes in the news. An Iowa sportscaster. So we were just discussing how we're watching CNN. There's a CNN reporter who's downtown Colorado, literally finds an old banana on the ground, an old rotten banana, and to demonstrate how cold it is, she grabs the banana and hits it against a pole. I'm like, is this what we've resorted to? So, Nicole, you found this one. You said you fact-checked it. This is a real...
I believe so. I was sent it by a friend, but I mean, as far as I can tell, this is a real sportscaster at KWWL.
KWWL in Waterloo, Iowa. So he's outside. And apparently what happened is the sports guy got assigned to cover weather.
Well, there's no sports happening. So it kind of makes sense.
And also, when you're in a market that small, you do everything. You run your own prompter, you anchor the news, you cover the weather, you do all this.
But he's not happy about it.
He's not happy about it. And he is like an instant sensation on the internet.
How are you feeling out there?
The same way I felt about 8 minutes ago when you asked me that same question, right? I normally do sports. Everything is canceled here for the next couple of days. So what better time to ask the sports guy to come in about 5 hours earlier than he would normally wake up, go stand out in the wind and the snow and the cold and tell other people not to do the same. I didn't even realize that there was a 3:30 also in the morning until today. This is a really long show. Tune in for the next couple hours to watch me progressively get crankier and crankier. How do I get that Storm Chaser 7 duty? I feel like Clint got the better end of that deal. You know, that thing's heated. The outdoors currently is not heated. The good news is that I can still feel my face right now. The bad news is I kind of wish I couldn't. Can I go back to my regular job? I'm pretty sure, Ryan, that you guys added an extra hour to this show just because somebody likes torturing me, because compared to 2.5 hours ago, it is just getting colder and colder. Live in Waterloo for the last time this morning. Thankfully, I'm Mark Woodley, News 7 KWWL.
Oh, my gosh. You've looked into that. Mark Woodley's a real man.
Yeah.
Real sportsman.
Yes, he is.
That's funny. Yeah. And
Poor guy.
I always like the sass, but it's so true. And you get them, you know, standing in the 3 feet deep floodwaters telling everybody else, don't go into the floodwaters. And, you know, we had a news director once at Fox 13 who was really good, who was basically like, look, we're not going to do that. It's cold outside or whatever it is. And we're not going to do what we tell people not to do. And so, yeah, it's just ridiculous. So this guy is getting a lot of attention right now. People saying he's now their favorite. And I loved this comment. You shouldn't have been so good at it. Now they'll always have you do it. That's probably true. So he probably, it's like when they say, don't answer the phones, because if you're really good at answering the phones, they'll make you answer the phones.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Mr. Woodley, Mark Woodley, he did a really good job. All right, up next in the Fastest 15, an update on a story we discussed yesterday. So we were talking on the show yesterday how Joe Kent, who was the Republican candidate in the 3rd Congressional District in Washington, the seat once held by Jamie Herrera Butler, he loses to a Democrat, Marie Perez. And he came out finally yesterday and conceded, saying, OK, the recount is done. I'm now officially going to concede this race. But in his concession, he also kind of alluded to what's to come. You know, he talked about how the turnout for Republicans is low and he wants to help to fix that. And he said, I'm far from done yet. I'll let you know what's in store for me in January. Well, I actually had a... So I was talking about that on the radio, and a friend of mine who's a Democratic political consultant was listening to the Dory Monson show yesterday, and I told him, I was like, oh, wow, good for you for broadening your horizons. And he said it hasn't made the news a lot. It was just in some paper down in Clark County. But Joe Kent apparently 6 days ago already teased to a crowd what he's going to do, and that is that he's going to run for the 3rd Congressional District again in 2 years. According to Clark County Today, he was at some event in Washougal, and the Patriots United event, and he told them that he, at the time, this 6 days ago, didn't expect the ongoing recount to change the outcome of the election, so he kind of knew that he was, in fact, going to officially lose, but he said that he's going to run again in 2024. He said the election has already been certified. He said that he wasn't going to concede until he'd reached the limit of what we can do, which was the recount, da-da-da-da. But he said that he was going to run for the same seat again in 2024, which I always am so mixed about because, you know, I look at what happened to Dino Rossi, for instance. You know, Dino Rossi probably was supposed to be the governor. I wasn't around in Washington State during that whole debacle, but I've done enough about it now to know that things were highly unusual in the gubernatorial election. And then he turned around and ran for U.S. Senate, correct? And then he ran for the 8th Congressional District. And that's sort of where I picked up on Dino Rossi. And I spent a lot of time at Fox on the campaign trail with Dino Rossi and Kim Schreier that year in 2018. And he lost three times. And it's sort of like, at what point do you as a candidate realize that maybe you can't win? Do you think that Joe Kent
should... Well, Dino's is hard because he... I mean, a lot of people think he did win.
Would we be election deniers if we say that? Well, he technically did win.
He did.
And then, he lost.
They found a tray of ballots that they had missed. But yeah, for him, I can see him wanting to make up for that, right? But you have to do something different. So obviously something didn't work. You didn't get elected. So what are you going to do that's different, that's going to make you more electable then? Well, I mean, maybe it'll just be staying away from Trump. Maybe it'll be... I don't know.
He seems to be really distancing it from being his fault as a candidate. And, oh, Nicole, my phone's ringing. You silence that? Sorry. Wow, what a failure. Just letting my phone ring in the studio. He seems to be really blaming voter turnout and other issues related to ballots and not so much himself, which I do think you have to be a little introspective. This is a seat that belonged to Republicans. This is a seat that was safely in Republican hands that he lost for Republicans.
I do think it probably says you went a little, I mean, we've said this before, but right now all of the candidates are so far left or so far right, and you've got to come back to where the bulk of people are. And I think that he banked on the bulk of people being far right, and I don't think that's the case as he predicted.
No, and I think he didn't lose by a lot. It was one percentage point. And so I'm sure he's thinking, well, I can easily make that up, spend a little more time campaigning, XYZ. But so he says he's going to run again. So apparently we did know what Joe Kent's big announcement in January was going to be, if he holds true to that, that he's going to run again in 2024. All right, the Marine Corps coming up next in the Fastest 15. The Marine Corps, why is there a story about this every single day? This getting rid of offensive language. You know, we were talking the other day, I think it was Stanford, came out with a list of words it wasn't going to use anymore, like American. Because apparently, if you call someone an American, then you're just co-opting for the rest of the Americas and suggesting that the United States is just the only country that matters in the Americas. So now Stanford is going to use U.S. citizen as opposed to American, things like that. Well, the Marine Corps, according to Gateway Pundit, the Marine Corps is going to axe the words sir and ma'am. You got to be kidding me.
No more, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
This is how, what are they going to say? What is a gender neutral word? So this is the Marine Corps time that broke this. What is a gender neutral word that would equate to that?
I believe they're just leaving it out. It's just going to be a yes.
Oh, it says, let's see. Oh, the Army, Navy, and Coast Guard effectively de-emphasize gender in an integrated environment. Instead of saying ma'am or sir, recruits in these services refer to their drill instructors using their ranks or roles followed by their last names. Gendered identifiers prime recruits to think about or visually search for a drill instructor's gender first before their rank or role. People really spend a lot of time thinking about these things, don't they?
Oh, my gosh.
A lot of time thinking about these things.
One person being offended, which it's not really offended. It's just pointing out something. And it changes. It makes everything more complicated.
Yeah. There's this other story, though, today. We'll talk about it here in the Fast 15. That I'm going to get a lot of grief from the text line for this, but it's in this same vein of like, oh, gender neutral, make everything non-offensive. But this one I tend to agree with. So actor Hugh Jackman has come out, and he says that there should be gender-neutral acting award categories. I think that's a great idea.
Well, doesn't it just minimize how many awards, which maybe that's a good thing, too, because they kind of go on and on forever, award shows.
But
nobody watches them anymore.
Right, but. And there's multiple reasons. Yeah, the award show's got like 150 categories. But why is it best actor, best actress? Why isn't it just the best person in the leading role?
The best.
It's like, because I also, as a woman, like, I don't want to get a job because I'm a woman. I don't want to be, put ahead of others because I'm a woman. I want it to be because I'm the best person for the job or I'm the best person for the role. Mm-hmm. And so I think in this society where we say, oh, we don't, for women, we want to be treated, with the same rights and respect as men, et cetera, which I think is right. I don't understand, physically speaking. Well, let me just say, in physical events like sports, obviously I agree with the gender separation. Because your gender and what you were born and your physical capability, you're different. Men and women are different. So I agree with separating those events based on gender. But with acting, what sort of differences is there between a man taking on a lead role and a woman taking on a lead role?
Well, I think sometimes maybe the roles are different. And I think they've come a long way. I think they are evening out a little bit. And But I guess it would just be I think it can be seen as celebrating women, right? So celebrating the types of roles that women have to take, like whether maybe this shouldn't be the case, but if it's always like an emotional role, and so you're putting more emotion into the female roles, and so you're celebrating who brought that out, which is different than a man's role where you're, going to war and doing something else, because that's typically, there has been G.I. Jane, but that's about the only one I can think of where it's like female in the war. But I guess it's separating kind of the types of activity you're doing in these roles.
Yeah, but like you said, I think movies have kind of come a long way in that thing with having women leads and men leads. And so Hugh Jackman's argument is like, because there aren't just men and women, there's people who are non-gender conforming that he doesn't want to leave out. My argument's for a different reason. I tend to agree that it's like, no, let's figure out who the best actor in a leading role was this year.
Sure.
And it doesn't have to be separated by a man or a woman. So although I typically disagree with efforts to make everything gender neutral.
To pretend that there is no gender, you mean?
Yes. Pretend that there's not a gender. I tend to agree with this. I don't agree with it for the same reasons as Hugh Jackman.
Right.
But I'm curious what you guys think. 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-CHIRO on the text line. Do you agree with the sentiment that maybe we make these acting categories, like best actor, best supporting actor, just gender neutral, where it's like the best person wins no matter what their gender is?
I think just for time's sake, it's a good idea.
If you
want people to pay attention to award shows again,
I agree.
Shorten them.
So another update to something we were talking about yesterday, speaking of just absolute ridiculousness. So yesterday on the show, there was this African-American movie critic. And I think it was for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And she just got absolutely eviscerated on Twitter because she called Avatar cultural appropriation. She was angry that they were casting white actors to play what she deemed people of color, that being these blue creatures on Avatar.
And to be clear, there actually were people of color also involved in the cast. Like, it's a very mixed cast, actually. But because there was white people even included in that playing blue characters, she was offended.
And also, apparently, and I've never seen Avatar, but I know the general gist of it. Apparently, some of these blue characters had like braids, like hair braids in, because it's just a made up species, right?
Right.
And one of them had these hair braids, and she was saying that that was basically cultural appropriation and that a white actor shouldn't have played that role. So, anyway, she gets just eviscerated, including by other people of color on Twitter who said, look, we're trying to get people to pay attention to issues that really, really matter when it comes to disparate treatment in this country based on skin color. And you're just making a joke out of it. You're making a mockery out of it by suggesting that we're just going to be outraged by every little thing. Well, apparently this movie critic is not the only one who has taken an issue with Avatar 2, which is, of course, directed by James Cameron. So indigenous groups are now calling for a boycott to Avatar 2 because they say that it is a white man's fantasy. Okay. So Avatar is, it's called Avatar: The Way of Water. And what some of these, it's in this case, it's a Native American film critic, says Avatar: The Way of Water is, quote, a white man's fantasy of Native American resistance. What does that even mean? It's blue people. It's literally blue people living in the future. So what they claim is that Cameron based this original film off the plight of the Lakota Sioux indigenous people. That's their claim. And I don't know if that's true. Is that true? Is this based off the plight of the Lakota Sioux people?
I have no idea.
So this film critic says you can make up anything you want in a fantastical tale and even have your left-leaning cake too, whatever that means. So it's like, I don't, even if he did base it somewhat off the Lakota Sioux, it's blue people. It's blue people in a sci-fi movie. How can this many people be upset by it?
I know. It's a different world that we're living in where these movies come out and they're, because this one was very expensive to make, as was the first one, and they were hoping it did something close to that. It did not. It failed by their standards, by their expectation standards. I think it still made some money, but who goes to the movies anymore? And all people do is take pictures, still frames of what they see, or take, you know, a promo or the trailer of a movie, and they just attack it like this without even seeing
it. And they're not even going. They're not going to be paying customers to it. They're not going to buy it online. And that's what I've always thought about this kind of cancel culture, boycott culture. The people who are trying to cancel you, they're not even the people who are consuming your product or doing anything like that. And it's like, that's when I stopped caring, especially when I started working for myself and doing the Undivided podcast. You know, we operate based on subscriptions, and people who like the show can pay $5 a month to listen to the show. And that makes everything so much better because they're there, they're on the page, they at least support the show enough to be watching. So all this hate I get on Twitter in Seattle, it's like, well, I know that those aren't the people who are, you know, making sure, or who are paying to listen to the show. It makes it so much easier just to just tune them out. Mm-hmm. And that's what Hollywood needs to get better at. All these people who have complaints like this, they're not going to watch that movie anyway.
Nope.
They're not going to watch it anyway. And I just think, do people these days really not have any real genuine problems in their lives? And that's a big part of this victim mentality. You have to make up problems. Every day you have to wake up and make up a problem because you just are not used to operating in a way where you're not offended by every, going through your life offended every day. I promise you, life is so much better if you don't go through it absolutely triggered and offended by every single thing around you. And that has been The Fastest 15.
This has been The Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
A world of news in a tiny 15-minute package just for you. Coming up, we're going to talk about a way that you can help kids in need this holiday season. Greg Backe with the Forgotten Children's Fund is going to be joining us to talk about how you can make sure that every kid in our communities gets a gift on Christmas. That's coming up next. Brandi Cruz filling in for Dory Monson. Holiday season, after all, and this week on the Dory Monson Show, we've been trying to highlight some of the wonderful organizations in our community that are out there helping specifically kids. Because, I mean, Christmas time is for kids, right? And I was, Nicole told me about this organization. We'll talk about them in a moment. But, so I learned recently, Nicole, you know this, I learned recently to ride a bicycle. Yeah. For the very first time, my fiance, bless his heart, 41-year-old man, was taking me around a park by our house to help me learn how to ride a bike because I never learned as a kid. And part of that was we could not afford a bicycle. And so here I am, you know, 34-year-old woman finally learns how to ride a bike. And so for that reason, what this organization is trying to do to help kids this time of year is very close to my heart. Greg Backe is the president of the Forgotten Children's Fund. And they have for years, as part of their toy drops, delivered bikes to kids in need, and they are down hundreds of bikes this year. So Greg joins us here on The Big Show. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I have so many questions about learning how to ride a bike at 34. But.
Well, it was very embarrassing, but now I'm just scooting around, like, well, not in the winter, but no problem at all. Greg, tell us about the history of the Forgotten Children's Fund.
Yeah, it's an all-volunteer organization, and we are a Christmas-based charity. We do operate all year round in various areas, but it's a Christmas-based charity, and essentially the quick version of the story is a little boy back in 1976 had written a letter to Santa Claus that somehow ended up at Francisco's restaurant in Burien. And Dick Francisco was this enormous man. He was a Marine and also a boxer. And he was huge, but he also had a huge heart. And this letter essentially said, you know, "Dear Santa, Mom said that you got lost and forgot about us last year. And basically that they weren't going to have Christmas. And so please don't forget about us next year." And so Dick, took that to heart. And he basically decided at that moment, if there's one kid that could write that letter, there's probably thousands. And so he started this organization called Forgotten Children's Fund that essentially gives Christmas to families in need. And, provides a full Christmas experience with a Santa Claus and elves and presents and the whole thing on Christmas Eve. So obviously it started as a small operation, but it has since blossomed into a huge organization that we're still all volunteer, but we serve anywhere from about 700 to 900 families around Puget Sound each year.
Wow, that's amazing. And so are these kind of community gifting experiences, or do you go to homes?
Yeah, so we usually have between 30 and 40 teams of Santas that go out as essentially Santa's helpers, but we do present ourselves as Santa Claus and Santa's elves. Microsoft donates their, if you're familiar with their campus vans, they drive us around in their campus vans with Microsoft drivers. Each team has a box truck that is full of toys. Designated for each family, so they have each child's name on them. Families nominate themselves, or sometimes they get nominated by other people, whether it be friends or schools or whatever. And so we put them through a screening process because we really try to focus on families that aren't being helped by other organizations.
Sure.
And so we go out on Christmas Eve, and we are not from Forgotten Children's Fund at that point. We are from the North Pole. And we get to go in people's homes. We take pictures, but we, at the very least, sit down and we have usually 1 to 3 bags full of toys, and we sit there and open bag one so each kid gets to open a present in front of Santa Claus.
Oh my gosh, I love this! And so, you guys, do you ask, especially this close, right, to Christmas Eve coming up, do you ask that people donate toys and coats, et cetera, or at this point, is it easier just to make a financial cash donation?
Yeah, obviously, we appreciate anything. A financial donation is easiest. We have outlets from which we can procure items, whether at wholesale or at extreme discounts. So cash is easiest, but we do accept anything. We have several different organizations that do toy drives for us. I do want to publicly thank Les Schwab. We're one of the beneficiaries of their toy drive.
Oh, great.
And they do an incredible job for us every year. And so they were just at our North Pole warehouse last Thursday. But yeah, cash donation is easiest, and that can be done through our website.
And your website is ForgottenChildrensFund.org, ForgottenChildrensFund.org. And why are you short on bikes this year? There's a bunch of little future Brandy Cruises out there who aren't learning to ride a bike. We can't let them wait till they're 34 years old, Greg.
Yeah, well, we don't want them to wait until they're 34 years old, because I would imagine it makes it more difficult. But yeah, it was just more difficult to procure them this year. And, you know, full disclosure, we probably waited a little bit longer than we normally do. But you know, it's a lesson learned by us, but also, you know, the bike is kind of icing on the cake for a lot of these kids, but traditionally every family that requests a bike gets one. Mm. So we'll probably fall a little bit short of that this year, but it certainly won't dampen the experience for them. But, the bicycle, you know, when you enter a home and one of the elves is wheeling a bicycle behind Santa Claus, to see the kids' face light up when they see that bicycle is really a cool experience.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And it is harder at 34. Not the balance is an issue.
I have one quick question on that. Did you learn on like turf, or did you go hardcore and learn on cement?
Oh, it was gravel. It was gravel. So it was a little difficult. I did tumble a couple times.
Okay. Well, nice work. I appreciate the dedication.
Of course. Well, Greg Backe, we appreciate, I mean, bless you for the work that you're doing to help these kids and to help our community. President of Forgotten Children's Fund, again, for people who are interested as we approach Christmas, the website to donate is forgottenchildrensfund.org/donate. Greg, thanks so much for joining us on the Dory Monson Show.
Hey, Brandy, thank you so much for having me, and congratulations on all your new endeavors. It's been fun to watch your success, too. So we appreciate all of this.
Oh, that's so kind of you. And we'll have you back on next year, and we'll check in on the bike supply early, okay?
Sounds
Nicole,
great.
Can I promise? I promised on behalf of a show that it isn't mine.
Absolutely.
Okay, good.
Let us know.
All right.
Keep us posted.
Okay, Greg, thanks. Much more ahead on the Dory Monson Show. Brandy Cruz filling in.
This is a Charlie Brown Christmas, so very few lyrics.
Oh, okay.
It's Dory's favorite Christmas song, I think.
What is the song?
I mean, he requests it often.
This is Greensleeves.
Okay. Maybe I can't identify
it. It's very jazzy, so a lot of their songs, you kind of have to look at the title to know what it is. Because otherwise, it's all kind of all over the place.
But it sounds very Charlie Brown, doesn't it?
Well, it just sounds nice. Elegant. I was asking earlier, we were talking about how Hugh Jackman wants there to be gender-neutral award category shows, and it's like the one gender-neutral thing I'm in favor of. A little split on the text line. 206 says, no, keep the awards for both men and women. 206, and I had a hard time figuring out what would they call it, and they said you could call it the best performer in a given category. And I think that's good. Best performer in a musical, best performer in a drama series. Mm-hmm. What's so hard about that?
No, it's all right.
I like that.
I'm okay with it.
Let's see. We were also talking about this Avatar situation. How apparently there is a movie critic, an African-American movie critic, who thinks Avatar is... white people shouldn't play the little blue beasts in Avatar because apparently it's cultural appropriation. And now you have some Native American groups who are calling for a boycott. And I had a lot of people in the comments saying that Avatar is just a ripoff of, it's based on Dancing with the Wolves.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that before, but a couple people said that.
I have to confess, I've never seen Dancing with the Wolves.
Yeah, I haven't either.
It's a Kevin Costner, right?
I do love Kevin, but...
I have never been a big movie person. To this day, I don't love watching movies because I get too emotionally invested in the plot lines. And I'm a very annoying person to watch a movie with.
Oh, interesting. I can see that it's like a long time to sit still, all of these different reasons. But I didn't know that was why.
You're too emotionally invested. I just get too invested too quickly. And then people die. And it's like, well, now my day's ruined. So I just am not a good movie watcher.
Yeah, stick to a rom-com.
Rom-coms are good. A good comedy. I'm fond of the good comedy.
Yep.
Brandy Cruz filling in for Dory Monson today on The Big Show. What were we told at the onset of COVID? Who was most susceptible to getting seriously sick?
At the beginning of COVID?
Yeah, what were we told?
We all were in trouble.
Well, no. They're saying obese people.
Then obese people.
And people with underlying conditions. Remember,
correct.
It was the elderly.
Elderly, yes.
People who were overweight, people who had comorbidities.
Sure.
And so that was, I mean, eventually we were all just, you know, lumped into the same category. But for those of us, I mean, and that makes a lot of sense when we talk about common sense and science and all that. I mean, if you are already unhealthy... or already suffering from an illness, of course, getting another illness on top of that is going to be a bad thing, right?
Right.
That's common sense. So anyway, I feel like we should have a series. Dory needs to start a series with some sort of sounder of today's stupid study, the stupid study of the week.
Or the I told you so.
Right. And it's just ridiculous. And it's like I was talking about the other day how some of these medical institutions need to be defunded because it's like you're really spending time studying mm-hmm. that. So this is from the American Journal of Preventative Medicine. And they come out with this blockbuster headline in the Washington Post. Regular exercise protects against fatal COVID, a new study shows. Oh, you mean that people who are in better shape physically are less likely to die from a disease?
Wow. It's a good thing they shut down those gyms.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
Or the pandemic would have been over in 3 months.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Should have kept the gyms going if that were the case. But it's like this stuff is so common sense. The study found that even people who worked out as little as 11 minutes a week, which how can you work out in 11 minutes a week, experienced lower risks of hospitalization or death from COVID than those who moved around less. Do we really need a medical institution to tell us that if you're in better shape?
I think they've been doing that.
You stand a better chance of surviving an illness.
For years.
It's the common sense stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, this is my latest target to defund. Let's defund the American Journal of Preventative Medicine, although I don't know if it's a government-funded entity. But some of these studies are absolutely worthless.
Regardless.
Yeah, going back to one of the very first things we knew during the pandemic, if you are in better shape, not only are you more likely not to get seriously sick from COVID, but also a host of other issues probably won't plague you if you're in better shape physically. All right, coming up on the big show, we're going to be joined by John Curley's coming in, right?
Yes.
John Curley's going to join us. The other day, I had him hop in on the big lead, and he got a real sassy with me because I was over complimenting his appearance.
He was very sassy on Monday.
I was like, John Curley, you look so good.
I hope he settled down.
He was so stylish, and he just refused to accept a compliment from me. Easily offended. John Curley. Apparently, he's in that category. Very easily offended. Easily triggered people. All right, much more ahead on The Dori Monson Show. Brandi Crews filling in.